that has now become a Reese Witherspoon book club pick, and it's set to become a Miramax TV production. But her professional avatar is that she is owner and director of a PR and ad agency. And that is where I'd like to start, Alka. How does one find themselves deciding that that's going to be their career trajectory?
You know, it was all circuitous. And I think that that's probably how most of our careers are formed. We're not told at the time that we're in college that, you know, by the way, your life is going to take a lot of different directions. And that's perfectly okay, because it's like a water flow. But no, we are told, you know, you're going to get this BA and then you're going to do that job for the rest of your life. Well, I always wanted to be creative. So I didn't know what I wanted to do. Like, I knew I didn't want to go to biz school. I knew I didn't want to go to law school or medical school. So I was looking around, and I wasn't in a hurry to get married because I didn't want children. And so I thought, well, what am I going to do with myself? Well, I got a degree in art history because there was a year at Stanford where you could go to Florence and study if you were majoring in art history. And I thought, oh, I want to go to Florence for a year. So I did that. And I majored in art history, just thinking that I'm just going to be an artist, or I'm going to live the artist life, or I'm going to maybe be a curator at a museum and so on. And, you know, I tried a bunch of those kinds of things, and I wasn't either that talented or that interested in them. So eventually I realized, hey, you know what I think I want to do is go into advertising, because I always had lots of ideas in my head about things that could be different or things that I could do. So why don't I try that? And so I went into the seventh floor of McCann Erickson, and I had sent a portfolio ahead of time. Now, I have no family that is in the creative arena at all. No artists, no advertisers, nobody. I didn't know a soul. So I sent off this portfolio to four different major firms in San Francisco. And I said, ostensibly, this letter that came to them was from my older brother. And my older brother was saying, please give Alka an opportunity to talk to you because she's 28 years old and she has forgotten to get married and forgotten to have children. If you don't give her an interview, we might have to take care of her for the rest of her life. And through that, I got all four interviews. I could not believe it. But and I was on the seventh floor of McCann Erickson being interviewed by two creative directors. And they said to me, they looked at my portfolio and they said, don't you want to be a writer? And I said, no, I want to be an art director. And they said, well, listen, we don't have any positions available for art direction, but you obviously know how to write because your portfolio shows us that. So we'll hire you as a writer and we'll try you out for 30 days. Let's see if this works. You know, this is not the way to get a job, I think, for most people, but this was the way in for me. And I thought, at the end of 30 days, I'm going to show them that I'm going to make a great art director, even though they're hiring me as a writer. But at the end of 30 days, you know, they were right. I really just enjoyed writing. I just loved copywriting and writing commercials and radio commercials and, you know, all kinds of things that we ended up doing. And I love that. So that's really how I went into writing. And I started as a copywriter. And then after 10 years of working at major firms like that, I just thought, you know what? I'm not getting ahead. I am put in this box. This box says, okay, you're a junior copywriter, or, you know, you're a woman, so you get to have these female projects. You don't get to have the male projects, you know, the moneyed projects, the big kahunas. And I saw all the boys in the offices next to me getting paid $20,000 more than I was paying, and what I was getting paid. And I would go to my personnel director and my bosses, you know, and I would say, hey, what gives? You know, I work just as hard as they do. I bring in clients, you know, clients respond to my work. Why aren't I getting paid as much? And they would say, oh, you're too ambitious. You're asking for too much. And you know, this is in the 80s. So this is like Mad Men type of, you know, reactions in advertising. And so finally I got really tired of being told no, no, no. And I thought, if I go to work by myself, what is it that I need if I start my own agency? How much capital do I need? What kind of people do I need to talk to? How will I get my first clients? I made a list of all the things I needed. And then systematically, I went through one by one, figuring out what I needed to do. And then ever since then, I've had my own agency, my own schedule, my own everything. And in that first year, I went from making, what was it, like $50,000 a year working for somebody else to making $400,000. So that to me was a huge starting point for me to realize that, yes, you know, I had a feeling that I could do all of that, but nobody else was believing in me. And I couldn't wait for everybody else to believe in me. I had to believe in myself.
I love that. You went and took a class in creative writing at the age of 51. What was the tipping point? You'd already been writing. Why go take a creative writing class?
There was a 2008 mortgage recession. I'm sure everybody remembers that. It was huge. And you were probably a financial analyst at that point or a reporter at the CNN. So you know all about it, right?
Yes.
So Joya, I was anticipating that for at least 2 years, my business would go down. Everybody was suffering at that time. I think a lot of people were actually laying people off. So I thought, okay, what am I going to do? And my husband had always said, you know, honey, I think you could write novels. I know you can write novels. And I would say, no, I do advertising. That's all I do. I'm an advertising hack. I do PR. I do marketing. I'm a hack. And he would say, I think you're way more than you're giving yourself credit for. And so I thought, okay, I've got 2 years. This master's program in creative writing is a 2-year program. At the least, I will come out with it, understanding a little bit more about how to write my marketing brochures and my websites and maybe gain some creativity there. But at the most, maybe I could start a novel and finish it and make sure that I study with the kind of instructors who have written something kind of similar to what I want to write. And if they have, then maybe, just maybe, they will send it off to their literary agent. And the latter is exactly what happened.
I love that. Now you have written 3 books, and your character, much like yourself, has not tread the path traditional. She has lived life on her own terms. And I thought as you were talking about it, that she's a flawed character. She made some good choices. She made some bad choices. But the thing that struck me the most, and that tees up our conversation today, is that she had agency over her life, not an ad agency. So just to tee it up before we go into your 6 tips on having agency, why make it semi-autobiographical?
You mean these novels? Because I wanted to authenticate details that I remembered from my past as a child growing up in India, in Rajasthan, vacationing with my family up in Shimla in the cooler climates. And also, going into jewelry shops in India, going to the Pink City Bazaar and, you know, getting goods there from one vendor and another. And the reason that I had to authenticate it with real life details is because I knew what people would think. They would say, you haven't lived in India since you were 9 years old. So what gives you the right to talk about India? What gives you the right to set these novels in India? And I have read novels before where it didn't really feel like I was actually in the setting. And I wanted to make sure my readers felt as if they were immersed in the setting. And so I made many trips to India. I talked to a lot of people, including my parents and my relatives, everybody who was alive during the 50s and then the 60s and then the 70s. I read a lot of fiction around that time that took place around that time. And I also watched a lot of movies around that time. And I wanted very much to cover all of my bases so that nobody would say, this isn't real. This doesn't feel real. And luckily, I've accomplished that.
And now that you've birthed these 3 books to the world, what would you say has been the biggest reaction?
The reaction has been really, it was a reawakening of my own beliefs about life that I was able to incorporate in my novels, and then a reawakening of my love for my birth nation and my heritage. And those are, I think, 2 other reasons. I didn't start off wanting to write for those reasons, but that's exactly what ended up happening. So in my journey, I had this amazing realization that the only reason when I was an immigrant to the United States in 1967, the only reason that I kept getting replayed the misperceptions of India that everyone was always throwing at me was that they didn't know any better. The history books in America did not cover things like why India was left in tatters at the time that the British left, at the time of independence in 1947. Why were so many industries having to be rebuilt? Why were the Indian people willing to take up this mantle and say, you know what, we are resilient. We can do this. We can establish our own country again with our own policies, our own education systems, and so on. So I had this real awakening, and I thought, I can pepper this story with it. In fact, it's going to be a lot more meaningful to me if I can bring that kind of information and knowledge to the public. And then the other thing that happened was this idea that, I have these beliefs. I have beliefs in women. I believe that women are far more resilient and far more capable than men are. I'm sorry, but I just do. I just have that opinion after watching so many women at work and outside of work for so many years. And I have been in those meetings where, you know, I've made a point, and then 5 minutes later, a man has made exactly my point, and all of a sudden, everybody thinks he's got a brilliant idea. And I'm like, hey, I'm sitting here at the table too. I just came up with that idea. What are you talking about? So I've also been, you know, in that kind of situation where I just think, you know, women deserve more agency. They deserve to talk about themselves. They deserve to have more recognition for the kinds of contributions that they make. So all of the women in my stories, and there are so many different kinds of women, women who want to work outside the home or inside the home, women who want children, don't want children, you know, women who really feel that they've got it all, and women who feel like they've got nothing at all. So in all of these women, I just explore the amount of the agency that they have in their lives. You know, how much of, you know, how much are they given in terms of power, and also how much power do they end up taking for themselves?
Let's get into point number one. So one of the things that you say about having agency is being disciplined about your me time and learning to say no. Why is that so difficult for women?
I think because women are the caretakers of their families. And so women are constantly thinking, whose birthday is coming up? Am I feeding everybody what I need to be feeding them in order for my whole family to stay healthy? Have my children done their homework? Has my husband taken his medication? I think that they're the ones who are so used to taking care of other people that they automatically do that. And that fills up our days as women. That just fills up all kinds of time that we could be using to explore what we really want to do in our lives. So I just think it's important for women to say enough. You know what? You can take your own medication. You know what? You can do your own homework. You know what? I am not the keeper of all of these flames. I am not going to do this anymore. At some point I just said to my husband, I don't know who put me in charge of making sure we have dinner on the table every day, but I'm not doing it anymore. There's no reason for me to do that. You know, I've got a busy life. You've got a busy life. Why can't one of us, why can't we take turns? Why can't you just make the salads every day, you know, and I'll do this. So, I think there's a lot of negotiating that we have to do.
Is there a time that you said no, and you're glad that your business was better for it, or you were better for it?
Oh, yeah. I had a situation where I had a client in a very large, high-tech company, and he had hired me to do a job, and I had started it, but I always asked for 50% of the deposit up front. And for some reason, because I'd done many projects for this company, I sort of let him slide a little bit. 3 months go by, and I still don't have any income. I've been invoicing, but I'm not seeing any income. So I finally had a meeting with him, and I just said, you know, I cannot do any more work until you pay me for my first invoice. I've already sent you a couple of emails about that. And he said, what? He said, you're not going to do any work if I don't give you a check like today? And I said, you don't work for free, and I don't either, you know, and I'm okay. I'm willing to let work go if I know that, you know, my client has integrity and they're honoring my contract. So I actually did let that one go. I did eventually get paid, and I had to go up to his bosses in order to get that check. It didn't feel good, but I thought it's more important for me to hold on to what I really feel is important. And I respect myself. I need to get paid for what I have just done. I would have finished the project if the guy had had more integrity, but he didn't. So I was happy to let that go. And it was so much better for me rather than stewing every night and thinking, why am I doing this work? Why am I not getting paid? I think we women spend way too much time stewing over things instead of just being very direct and saying, okay, this is the lay of the land.
Number two is to buck convention, go it alone.
I think that when everybody is going in one direction, you should go in another. These are my business cards, by the way. And my tagline is be bold. And in the back of the business card, it says, take chances, talk loudly, turn left, act differently, be first and laugh last. So this is like, for me, it's very important to not go in the same direction that everybody else is going. So if I was given a project and said, okay, we need to sell X number of widgets for this department, I would turn that advertising campaign into something they hadn't even expected, something that wasn't, the run of the mill kind of thing that they were used to. And I do the same thing with the way I dress. I do the same thing with the way I just lead my life. I just, I refuse to look like everybody else because I'm not going to do that. I think that there is more to be gained by figuring out who you are as a person and being your independent self every time.
Try new things and say yes to new experiences. Marianne and I were on a call earlier today, and she said in her first year of business, she said yes to everything. But you're saying say yes to new experiences and try new things.
Yeah. Yeah. For example, I never would have become, an author if I hadn't said yes to this MFA program. If I hadn't said yes to my mentor saying, you know what, I've got some changes I'd really like you to make in this, and then I'll send it off to my literary agent. And then saying yes to my literary agent saying, I think I'd like you to cut out every other chapter in the book. They're just not working for you. You need to pare this down. So there are all of these new skills that I've just learned. Every new experience has brought a whole new set of answers that I've had to give. And my work has gotten better for it. My work has become so much better. I am now at about 600 book clubs that I have attended on Zoom in the last 18 months, all because I've said yes. Yes, I will talk to you. Yes, I know you need connection. Yes, I know you're reading my book and I thank you so much. I am so grateful to you. So yes, I would like to make that happen.
When you say, can you give us an example in your storied life of a time that you said yes? I guess this would be the counterpoint to when you said no. You said yes, and you were better for it. It gave you the agency that you needed at that moment.
Okay. I think it was... I think it was when one of my friends at a dinner, this is back when I was still working at agencies, and I was talking to him over dinner, and he said, would you be happier if you were, working for yourself and had your own clients that you really picked, you cherry picked your clients? And I said, yes, I would. And he said, well, then why don't you? Why don't you? And also I said at that point, well, if I were to go off on my own, could I make a presentation at your company? And he said, of course. And that was like, oh my gosh, that was my very first pitch. That was an amazing thing to have happen.
Way to work the dinner party. embrace the lessons rather than fight them. What is the time that you had a lesson and you embraced it instead of fighting it?
Let me go back to that one example about that client who wasn't paying me. So one lesson I learned from that is, listen, do not veer from your business practices. You said you always want 50% deposit up front. Don't get started without it. That was your process before. Why not just keep that process and then you won't get into this trap again? Because those kinds of things that happen are uncomfortable and they make us feel somehow that it's our fault. And I think it's probably just best to say, I got to move on. Okay, I've learned something from this. I made a mistake. I've got to move on. I've got to accept what happened and not beat myself up, because it's so easy to beat ourselves up.
Why do we have such a hard time being kind to ourselves? And this is your next point on having agency. We're many of us type A personalities, hard drivers in what we do for a living. Why is being kind to ourselves so difficult?
I think it's because we are wanting the best of ourselves. We are so hard on ourselves. We want that A plus. We want the extra credit. We want the recognition. We want all of those things. And we know we're capable of getting all of those things. So I think that so much of this has to do with, you know, ourselves. It's that self-motivation that wants to get us there. And then every time we do accomplish something, we get so many kudos. Right. Everybody around us says, oh, my God, great job. That is fantastic. You just really knocked that out of the park. And so we get addicted to that. We get addicted to all the positive praise. And I think at some point we just have to say to ourselves, even if I don't get positive praise, I will survive this day and I will be a good person regardless.
And your final point before we turn it over to questions is to take stock of your values so you can prioritize. Decipher that statement before we get into what that means.
You know, taking stock of what you firmly believe in. I firmly believe, as I said, I think that women work really hard and I think they do a great job and I think that they deserve to be recognized. So when I started my agency, I only hired women. I only hired women to be my art directors, to be my writers, to be, you know, because you got to walk the walk, you got to talk the talk. If that's what you believe, then you have to manifest that also for yourself. So you've got to know what your values are, and then you've got to practice them.